This is a podcast from Minute Media.
Hello, 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 and welcome to another edition of the Niner Noise podcast, part of the Fansided Podcast Network. My name is Robert Morrison. I'm a contributor at NinerNoise.com, and here with me, associate editor of NinerNoise.com, Peter Panacea. Peter, how's it going, man?
It's going okay. Not a lot of news on the 49ers front at all.
Nothing going on. It's been very, very, very quiet for sure. We have nothing to talk about. So until next time, no, I'm just kidding. Peter, I think we should start off with a very important question. Do you think Deebo Samuel has officially rescinded his trade request at this point?
You know, that would be hilarious. From my understanding on this, there's no like official document or form, like, or like you go into your player portal on the 49ers website and you click a box that says I'd like to be traded and he has to go unclick it or anything like that. It's done.
Yes. So for those of you who are not paying attention, and I don't know how you could be a 49er fan and not be paying attention, but Deebo Samuel is locked in for the foreseeable future. He signs it's a 3-year extension, but the extension kicks in after, because the rookie deal has to be played out, I guess, in the way that I don't know if that's an always thing, but it has to, at least under this particular contract, it extends the contract that he's under currently. So he'll play out the 2022 season under a version of his original rookie contract. And we'll talk about the numbers here as we understand them in just a second. And then it's a 3-year extension that covers 2023, 2024, and 2025. All told, it's somewhere in the neighborhood of, 77.5 or something like that $1 million over 3 years, the extension. Gets a good chunk of guaranteed money. I don't remember what the actual number was. Do you recall off the top of your head? 50 something like that.
Yeah. So basically what he's got as far as guarantees go, and this is according to over the cap. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of, you kind of have to take measure of some things here, but the fully guaranteed part they listed is $41 million. But there's a little bit more on it, I believe, if you were to go take a look I think Adam Schefter, when he first tweeted it out, said it's $58.1 million guaranteed. So, you know, a lot of these numbers are still coming in. You don't necessarily know every single detail about it. But either way, if it is that $58.1 million, that's a pretty sizable amount, right? I mean, yeah. The 49ers have historically not dished out a ton of guaranteed cash for their players. But in this case, when you're talking about the best offensive weapon on your team, you know, at some point you got to pay.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've talked about this before that, you know, it's kind of great from the 49ers perspective where it's like, hey, we're going to do a lot of team friendly contracts and have a lot of outs worked in and maybe not a lot of guaranteed money. That's cool from a team perspective, but players see it too. And they're just kind of like, hey, you know, if you're not going to get paid or lock in those guarantees, then that's a problem. But either way, whichever figure you want to go with, if you want to go with, with Schefter's tweet, $58.1 million, or what Over the Cap uses is a $41 million total guaranteed. That's it. And essentially, when you're looking at contracts, you know, we talk about, oh gosh, you know, it's a 3-year deal worth $71 million or whatever. You got to look at the guarantees. I mean, that's the meat of the contract right there. So good for him. Well deserved. Happy it's done. One talking point that paralleled the entire offseason should be over.
Finally.
And now it's up to him to live up to the deal.
Yeah, one more talking point to go, which I'm sure we'll touch on before we finish up here. A couple of interesting things that, because I was looking at those same numbers from Over the Cap. Obviously, as you noted, there's still some things trickling in terms of specifics. One of the things that the 49ers, especially with Parag Marate, kind of being the cap guru guy that he is, that they do so well is they figure out they do a really good job of using the cash flow that they have, which is where those guarantees have to come from, to kind of get cap numbers down. And they were able to kind of keep the cap number down supposedly for this first season, to a relatively low number compared to where it's going to be, which given their current salary cap situation was really important for them to keep that number pretty low. Now it'll be interesting what happens once the extension really kicks in, because while according to over the cap's numbers, they're looking at about a $6.6 million cap hit this year, a $9.1 million give or take next year, and then the balloon payments, if you'll pardon the borrowed phrase, really kick in the back end of the contract when it's a $29 million cap hit and a $24.5 million cap hit. And then there's a void year, because there always is with these 49ers contracts, of a $7 million dead money. I think there's also a reasonable chance that they get through 2024, and we're probably doing this again, talking extension to kind of balance out some of those numbers. Obviously, once we get to 2024, we're going to be hopefully having conversations about another quarterback and his contract situation, and they'll be figuring that all out. And so it's a never ending game, but it certainly is interesting to talk about. But so one thing that I found very interesting besides the numbers as well, Adam Schefter tweeted this out. You noted a couple of details that he said, but he tweeted this out today. And the reason I want to talk about this is because it's very interesting, because a lot of the conversation about, well, why was Debo so disgruntled and why didn't he want to play, blah, 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 blah. And a lot of people went back with, you know, this is just a tactic to get the team to pay. Some of it was, well, he's not happy with how he's being used, et cetera, et cetera. Couple of interesting incentives built into this contract, according to Schefter, that he tweeted out today, August 1st, as the contract was signed. It's a $650,000 a year, every year that he reaches 380 or more rushing yards. It's $150,000 if he scores three rushing touchdowns or more, obviously. And then it maxes out at a $650,000 per year and at $1.95 million over the life of his new contract. So there are some incentives, relatively low incentives when you look at the entirety of the contract. But what do you make of that? Is that just something to throw in, or do you think that's something to entice Debo to allow them to continue to use him in any way? What do you make of those incentives?
Well, so going back to the offseason, the whole discussion about Debo being upset about his usage, a lot of that stemmed from Ian Rappaport. And look, Ian Rappaport's pretty well plugged into the league, and I'm no way going to say, hey, you know, he doesn't know what he's talking about, he was wrong. But when he was reporting that, it wasn't so much as if he was saying, this is what I've heard from sources, this is what, you know, people familiar with the situation are telling me, as much as it was just saying, I think this is an issue. It was a lot of his own conclusions, which is fine. We all have our own opinions and conclusions on things, and we can make that kind of a part of our, you know, entire conversation and dialogue. So either way, the one thing that you kind of digested in the wake of all that was Debo's use as a dual threat player, a guy that can catch the ball, run out of the backfield, run through the tackles. Maybe he doesn't want to run through the tackles like 10 times a game anymore, and I don't right. blame him. But at least just being so unique, that uniqueness is what makes him such a special commodity, right? Like, he would be a very good wide receiver if he was just a very good wide receiver, like what he was. That would be great, you know, right. Top 10 probably, you know, top 15 for sure.
Yeah, he was, what, second in the league in receiving yards when he had to make the switch over to the threat mode
right
last year?
At the top. Like, yeah, like the first, like, 8 weeks or 9 weeks of the season, he was, like, on fire, right? It was him and Cooper Kupp just going neck and neck. So, you know, but then when he started carrying on the ground, that uniqueness is what makes him so special. So, either way, if you took a look at what Kyle Shanahan said this morning, just before the 49ers kicked off week two of training camp. And I don't have the transcript right in front of me, but Shanahan basically pointed out that, hey, look, yeah, there, it was never about the usage. We're both on the same page with that. You know, it's our goal just to basically use him however we want. There's also, you know, you read about the incentives. There's nothing in there that has any sort of clause saying, okay, we're going to limit him. And in fact, there's actually incentives for being a multi-purpose weapon. And the part of it too, that I know when I talked with Larry Kruger about this a while ago, where if Samuel was actually saying something along the lines of, oh, hey, like, I don't want to be used in this way anymore, what happens if it's, you know, late in the fourth quarter in a playoff game and the game's on the line, or a must win, you know, week 18 game, and you're in the red zone and it's like, hey, it's a third and one play. Like, isn't Samuel the type of person to say, like, hey, give me the ball, put it in my hands? Like,
I think we've seen that happen already, right?
Yeah, you've seen clips of that on, I think it was against the Cowboys that
yep,
one
in the playoffs, when he scored off the interception in the first play, he ran it in for a touchdown.
Yeah. He literally called a shot. And so it's like, okay. So those incentives are nice. Obviously, it's going to be a little bit more beneficial for him to do that if he's, you know, such a unique weapon in that regard. Not huge, by the way, the contract, but still mm-hmm. nevertheless important. One of the things that I actually thought was kind of cool about the deal is that for the upcoming 3 years, he's got, you know, I think it's a $200,000 workout bonus.
Yep.
Basically, yeah, that's an incentive to go work out in Santa Clara, right?
Because he has
to go be at the 49ers facility. Yeah, he's always been.
He's been famously cagey about staying in California during the offseason. So
right, exactly. So it's like, hey, you know, you're going to get a $200,000 vacation to go spend summers in Northern California, as opposed to, well, if he goes to LA, it's not that much different. But I was like, if you're out in
Miami, you know, I think.
Yeah, if you're out in Florida during the middle of summer and it's like, all right, you know, 90 degrees with 90% humidity, go have fun with that.
Yeah. For the record, quick math on this is the math portion of the Nine and Nose podcast tells me that 380 rushing yards a year is it's 22 yards per game, basically 22 and change. So he would, I mean, the way that he runs, that he has run up until this year when he's run the ball, it's been those longer chunk plays where, you know, it's a jet sweep, you know, kind of a reverse action kind of situation where he's picking up, you know, 10, 15, 20 yards at a time. So it's interesting to talk about, and you know, they're still going to use him, as you say, in a dual mode. This is a relatively easy, I think, pocket for him to slide right into, right? It's not like they made the number like 700 where he has to beat that now. Just for the record, he has not actually got to 380 yards in a regular season yet during his career. He had only 159 as a rookie, just 26 in 2020, but he only played in 7 games, and 365 yards last year. So it's not unobtainable, but it is something that there would have to be a pretty considerable uptick in his probably in his yards per carry to get there. And he was up over 6.6 yards per carry last year. So it'll be really interesting to see how that works. But good news is, of course, that, you know, Deebo was right out there in training camp today, which was good to see. I know that Shanahan noted they're going to take it slow with him, even though he, by all accounts, seems to have come into camp in pretty good shape and ready to go. I know that's something that's been a concern of the teams since day one, that he's kind of somebody who tends to kind of loosen up a little bit during the off season. And there's been some concerns there, but he seems to have taken care of that for sure. But I don't know, Peter, any other thoughts about the contract or about what it means, what it says about the 49ers? Or are we just really ready to be done talking about it and onward?
Like, so you mentioned here just kind of this never ending game, right? And you think about the lifespan of the contract. The beautiful part is this, Debo's base salary this year is $965,000. To do this deal, the 49ers cut into only $2 million approximately of what remaining cap space they have. And I think it's something they have like $3.3 million left. And mm-hmm. there's still one big overarching transaction that could happen.
What could that be?
Free up more. I don't know. What was it? The D Ford move? I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it. Anyway. So yeah, there you go. But either way, you know, less than $1 million in base salary, you know, total cap hit of 6.7 million or so. And when the numbers start to balloon, they're supposed to balloon next year as far as the total salary cap is concerned. All these new NFL media deals are going to be going into effect. And the cap is only going to, it's anticipated to not just expand next year, but explode. So the 49ers took advantage of that early by kind of backdating a lot of this contract. But when it expires in 2025, Debo will be 29 years old, heading into 30. That gives the 49ers kind of a nice out because he does have a little bit of an injury history. And that's sure. not just talking about last year. That actually goes back into college as well. Some hamstring issues, things like that. So if this bites you, okay, it bites you, but you really are just committing big money at that time. Granted, there's a lot of that back end money that's, you know, fully guaranteed and committed and everything like that. But either way, the whole gist of this is it's going to be the lifespan of Trey Lance's own rookie contract.
Right. Yeah.
So you're going to be, you know, Trey Lance will be, his current contract runs out in 2024. There's a fifth year option for 2025. That's when Debo's deal expires. So you're going to see that maturation process from Trey Lance with Debo Samuel for that period of time. Now, what the 49ers salary situation is back then, you've got Nick Bosa is going to be in line for a contract extension about a year from now. You know, you're going to have some other players who have been cornerstone pieces of the 49ers who are making a lot of money. They might not be on the books at that point. You know, mm-hmm. George Kittle, Trent Williams, we don't know. You know, you have no idea. So either way, at least this is a great time to take advantage of this. And then probably my favorite part, at least if you're taking a look at the annual average value for wide receivers in terms of money, Debo's annual value is $23.85 million. That's eighth among wide receivers. You know, I mean, earlier this offseason, we're thinking about, gosh, he could be getting like 26, 28, maybe yeah. even close to 30 million like Tyreek Hill's getting. No. Granted, guys like Tyreek Hill and Davante Adams have a little bigger, a little more of a pedigree, you know, more Pro Bowls, more All-Pro nods, things like that. But, you know, all told, eighth in annual value. Like that's not bad. That is kind of your market rate. And when you think about some of the other young receivers coming up, you know, Justin Jefferson, you know, some of these other guys who, Jamar Chase, what are they going to get? You know, they're going to totally just destroy the wide receiver market in a few years. So, hey, lock that in now, get ahead of the market. Can't complain about that. And even for now, in contrast to some of these other wide receivers who have been getting paid this offseason, it's not a bad deal.
No, agreed. And I mean, you mentioned, you know, a couple of other, I mean, not only the Bosa contract, which they've pretty definitively said this is going to be something they're going to worry about next year. Then you have guys like, you know, Brandon Ayuk, who, if he continues on the trajectory that he was on at the end of last season, and, you know, all accounts coming out of training camp seem to be that he is 100% on the same page with Trey Lance, and that he could be sort of very much his go-to guy as far as receivers are concerned. So, you know, he'll be up not long after that, although he'll also have a fifth year option available because he was a first round pick as well. That was the same year as Javon Kinlaw, right? So that was the year after Bosa. So they're still a little bit of ways, but these are things that you have to be paying attention to when you're thinking on down the line. And as we said, we're really hoping that they're going to have to be worrying about the $250 million contract that they're going to be giving Trey Lance at the end of the 2025 season or whenever it is, because he's decided that he's, you know, one of the top 10 quarterbacks in the league. And that would be something that I don't think anybody would complain about personally, but there we go. All right. Well, that is that's exciting. I'm glad it's done. I'm glad it's over with. I'm glad Debo looked really, you know, happy to be, as we all would be, you know. wouldn't take much to get you to smile in front of the camera, right? But you know, he had a lot of millions of reasons to do so. But I think the best part about this, and then we'll move on to the next thing, is that he has remained engaged with the team throughout this whole process, right? He showed up at mini camp. He showed up on time for training camp. And while he was doing that whole hold-in thing and that sort of thing, there are still plenty of pictures and plenty of reports about he's, you know, chatting it up with his teammates and, you know, he and Shanahan were even talking, I think as late as Saturday, and, you know, there was engagement. It wasn't like he was just kind of there and ignoring everybody. So you kind of got the feeling this was heading in the right direction as soon as training camp started. And so it's, I'm glad to see that he is ready to go, hit the ground running today when they put the pads on for the first time, and excited to see what he's got for 2022 and beyond.
Yeah. Yeah. And it shows you, hey, those face-to-face interactions, they can repair a lot. So whatever the damage was, who knows? The disagreements, maybe it'll come out in the wash later. Maybe we'll never know. It's just behind closed doors. But hey, rearview mirror.
Yeah.
Cool with that.
For sure. Absolutely. All right. So there was one other pretty major piece of news that came out that was NFL related. This was not specifically 49ers related. But we want to talk about it in terms of, like, this is a thing that happened, but also in terms of just how does it impact the 49ers in terms of the much discussed Mr. James Garoppolo, who remains on the team at this point. And again, you know, seems to be out there, you know, engaging with teammates and running and doing all the stuff, but not throwing a football, as to no one's surprise, but there we go. So this is bizarre, and I don't know, Peter, you're going to have to clue me in on this. Is it common practice for NFL suspensions to be handed down by a third party? Is that a normal thing? That's very strange.
From my understanding, this is something new, and it's not something I've read up about very much, aside from when it was announced that an independent judge commission would be overseeing this item that we're about to get into. I hadn't heard of that. It was always to my kind of familiarity that, and at least what you've seen in years past, that a lot of times it's just the commissioner's office throwing out discretionary discipline.
Yeah.
And was there any consistency with it?
No,
absolutely not. You know, like, it, you had no idea. It's like, okay, hey, yeah, like, you get suspended 4 games for cheating the game, and then you smoke a little weed on the side and you get suspended for like 16. It's like, oh gosh, it's like, wait, is this arbitrary? So I don't know if it's something. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So I don't know if this is kind of the first high profile case where this has happened, but I'll have to read into that. It's kind of a good ask point.
It is the first time I remember seeing anything about this, but for those of you, again, who are unaware, if you're a football fan, I think at this point you're pretty well aware of the fact that this independent judge came to a decision about the suspension for Browns quarterback Deshaun Watson, and the number came down to 6 games. Six games. There you go. I'll allow the tone of my voice to allow you to make your own decisions about how I feel about that. But that's not really the point. The point here is that we have discussed the Browns as a possible player in the Jimmy Garoppolo sweepstakes, merely because if it turned out that Watson got suspended for an entire year, for example, that they would maybe not trust Jacoby Brissett with their for all intents and purposes, I would say a pretty close to Super Bowl caliber roster. Taking account in Watson as a player, I think that's definitely true. But also, even if you remove him, I think you could say without a doubt that the rest of the roster is built to compete in their division and also compete in the AFC. Although that's asking a lot because that's a tough conference for sure. But six games pretty much means that they're probably just going to ride or die with Jacoby Brissett for those six games and see how it goes. Now there is one little caveat. As we mentioned, this process appears to be new so far as we can tell. The NFL can apparently, the commissioner's offense can apparently come in and decide that they would like to make to make a different decision about how long the suspension will last. I don't know what the parameters are of that. I don't know under what circumstances they would make that decision, but it is out there and it is a possibility. So it could be that Watson still gets more games, but as of right now, as we sit here again on August 1st, it's going to be six games, and that probably removes the Browns from the Jimmy Garoppolo contention in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, it does. And multiple reports all the way along ever since there was talk of Deshaun Watson getting suspended have suggested the Browns weren't all that interested in Jimmy Garoppolo anyway. Now, again, factor in a number of things, smoke and mirrors campaigns, the fact that nobody even knew what was going to happen with Deshaun Watson. And to your point, the AFC is brutal this year and who knows what happens with them. But they're in bad cap shape in 2023. So if they're going to go in, they would go in this year and you would figure that, okay, should Watson be suspended all year long? I'm not trusting Jacoby Brissett to go out there and even keep the ship afloat for a full year, let alone, whatever amount of time. But the NFL has been just so inconsistent with this across the board. So I don't see much of anything changing here. Like if you're thinking they're going to make a decision based on moral judgment, if past behavior indicates as a predictor of future behavior, you're not going to be surprised. So anyway, kind of moving beyond all that with the Browns, who have a cush first six games of their schedule, by the way.
Do they?
I think it's what? Yeah, it's Panthers, Jets, Steelers, Falcons, Chargers in week five. That's kind of the only game you have to really worry about facing a tough roster. And then the Patriots, it's Bill Belichick and Mac Jones. But other than that, Patriots roster stinks. So it's funny how this works out. And I don't say funny, like trying to make fun of the situation, but just ironic. So as far as Jimmy Garoppolo potentially being traded there, Watson being suspended full year for either a full year or 12 games or whatever, just anything more than what was in play, kept that hope alive. And a quarterback who is well respected in the locker room, who does have a history of winning, and as much as I love the quarterback wins stat, there is something to be said about just being competent on a good roster that's a run first offense with a good defense. Guess what? That's what the Browns have. So that could have made an impact. But as it stands, if you had one more bidder in the Garoppolo sweepstakes in what is still very much a very weak market for him, even a week into training camp, you just removed another possibility. So unless you get this within the next few days that the NFL says, hey, you know what? We need to make a statement. We need to send a message here. Maybe they just receive so much outrage in response to this six game suspension that they decide to levy and further punishments. You're not going to see Jimmy G go there. And from the Browns' perspective, if they get three wins from Jacoby Brissett, like they go 500 over that first six game stretch, they would be elated. It's just ecstatic if they finished 500 and then get Deshaun Watson back, even though Watson didn't play at all last year, but still.
Right.
So you cross off the Browns, that probably it cuts into any bidding war that there could be. I mean, there's still some teams out there, like, I don't know, perhaps the Giants. I don't know. I'm just trying to think. So, you know, maybe a few more teams are interested, but cross the Browns off, man. That's pretty much kind of how it goes.
Yeah, and at this point, the fact of the matter is you got to think that any of the teams that might be interested are interested in, like, making – he's not going to walk into every single team that might be interested and be the starter, right? I mean, like, if he goes to Seattle, he's definitely – I'd say Garoppolo is better than what they have there with Geno Smith and Drew Locke, you know, up there in Seattle. But if he went to Miami, let's say, to join Mike McDaniel, he's probably not going to walk in and be the starter over Tua. Now, he can certainly breathe down Tua's neck and put some pressure on him. And if Tua struggles, we could be in a situation where, like we were in San Francisco this past year, or what everybody thought the situation could be if he stayed here this year. Even same thing with the Giants. Like, if he goes to the Giants, Daniel Jones still reasonably there, right? But this is his make or break year. It's that final year, his final chance to show that he's good, he's worth something. And so I could see Garoppolo fitting in there as like an extra, as a backup who might step in if Daniel Jones struggles again. But like I said, if you look at it, same thing with like the Lions, or, you know, to go back up Jared Goff or whatever, the likeliest place for him to be a starter day one is, you know, in the Pacific Northwest, sad to say. I don't know. It doesn't feel like, it feels like all those teams are willing to wait it out and to play chicken with the 49ers and make them prove that they're actually going to do what they said they would. And that was that they could afford to keep him, and they would keep him. I don't know. It right now, the likeliest option seems like he stays throughout training camp and through the preseason, and he does exactly what he's been doing so far, which is, you know, he's doing laps and running a little bit and doing some weight training and some rehab stuff, and never steps foot on the field and never does any football related activities for the entirety of the preseason. And then we get to August 30th, which is, you know, 29 days away, and they either cut him or somebody has in that interim time lost their starter for whatever reason, some, you know, training camp injury or something like that, and they decide to make a last ditch trade for Garoppolo. But I think the most likely outcome right now is that he is here until roster cuts, till final roster cuts, and then they have to do what they have to do at that point.
Yeah. And it's funny because I was going down through the list of teams that could be interested, and you mentioned quarterbacks who are entrenched, right? I mean, Davis Mills with the Texans, like, he was pretty good on a bad team last year, you know, his rookie season. I mean, it was bad. So it's like, all right, that maybe is an option. And if you're the Texans, you're going through a massive rebuild. Why would you do that when you've got a young potentially up and coming quarterback who is going to grow and hopefully get better? I would do it if I were the Giants. And I'm not saying this to be like a 49ers homer, like, hey, any Giants fans listening to this podcast, like, Jimmy G is great. Trust me. You know, I'm not doing that.
He's better than Daniel Jones, probably.
Yeah. You know, the Giants don't want Daniel Jones. They would have picked up his fifth year option. They tried to surround him with talent last year. He still stunk. Brian Daboll comes in, good head coach. You know, that offensive line is better. There's still some offensive weapons there, you know, receivers, you know, Kenny Golladay. We'll see if Kadarius Toney kind of turns it around. Saquon Barkley, hopefully for his sake, is healthy. That defense is all right. The division itself is winnable. And I know everybody's very bullish on the Eagles and the Cowboys. You know, they got worse this offseason, and you know, the Commanders have Carson Wentz at quarterback, so make of that what you will. But that division's winnable. You know, Daniel Jones is awful. Brian Daboll does not want to keep him there. And so if you're Daboll, if you're the Giants, why not try to go for it? You know, the NFC as a whole, as a conference, like, you get into the dance, you've got a shot. So the division's winnable. You know, you would immediately up your chances. The New York media would love that. You know, they'd be happy about that. And I mean, Right, right. You know, and perhaps the Giants would have to trade, I don't know, they'd send Daniel Jones back to the 49ers for,
no, thank you.
You know, the final year. Well, hey, 49ers, you could acquire him in the trade and then just cut him.
That's true.
I think he's got a roster bonus due on August 5th. So if this was to happen, it'd have to happen soon. So I was looking at the numbers on it and I was like, well, okay, if this is going to take place, we've got a few days left. But, you know, if I was the Giants, I'd do it. But, you know, again, just kind of to your point, take away the Browns. There's one less suitor. There's other teams that know this. Nobody's desperate right now. You didn't see an injury to a clear cut, bona fide, good starter. You haven't seen that yet. Of course, this time tomorrow, you could be reading about someone going down with some injury for a playoff ready team. And, you know, maybe you get that reincarnation of the 2016 trade of Sam Bradford from the Eagles over to the Vikings. So yep. First round pick for that one, but we're not there yet. And Deshaun Watson, six games, unless that changes. And I don't know if it will. Take the Browns off the trade destination chart.
Yep. Well, there we go. All right. Well, that's enough talk of Jimmy Garoppolo. I'm sure he'll come up a couple of times before things really get going. But Peter, any parting words before we close things up for this edition of the podcast?
49ers defense looks really good in training camp.
Yeah.
All three levels, linebackers are looking good. The pass rush is looking good. Charvarius Ward, man, he's the real deal as a cornerback. It feels so weird to think that, oh my gosh, there's really a number one cornerback again. And it's not like trying to milk something out of Richard Sherman coming off an injury. That was cool when it happened. Like Ward's young, he's good. And he's the real deal. That's been fantastic. Offensive struggles, Trey Lance, you know, kind of feel bad for him just because that defense is legit. The interior of the 49ers offensive line, get it solid, like whatever, you know, maybe stop messing around with the carousel on the interior, figure out the best guys and go to get some continuity there. Maybe that's the solution. I don't know, but either way, I'm excited. You know, everything that you would hope to have happened in training camp has happened and gosh, it's weird to think that, you know, next week we'll be getting ready for a football game.
Absolutely. Cool. All right. Well, thanks as always, ladies and gentlemen, for listening to another episode of the Niner Noise podcast, part of the Fansided Podcast Network. As always, please check out ninernoise.com for all your latest 49ers news and analysis. And please be sure to rate and subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen. And go ahead and give us that review, and we appreciate 5 stars. And of course, share it with all your fellow 49er fan friends. So until next time, let's sound the horn, 49ers.